This is the Climb to Space.
Hello and welcome to the Decline to State Internet Radio Stream, the show in which we get together to discuss the ups and downs of life outside the Matrix. Decline to State is proud to bring you in a surprisingly few netcasts in which the hosts do not support acts of aggression against you. You can find us on the web at declinefm.com, where you will find a link to the live chat. The live chat is your go-to way to interact with other listeners or bring up points for discussion on the show. This is especially important today because we are discussing a technology which is at once a natural phenomena and a tool that allows humans to have faster-than-light communication. And is also in large part responsible for bringing our voices to your ears now, but more on that in a moment. I am Ronald McPaul, your beacon of freedom in the heart of the Silicon Valley, and I'm joined by my handsome co-casters, so I'll let them go around the horn and introduce themselves.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. This is Eternal.
This is Rutto.
Rutto chiming in from the hipster belt. And so, as I alluded to earlier, we are talking about the electromagnetic spectrum today, or radio bandwidth allocation, et cetera, et cetera. And I'm pleased to say we have one of Ancapistan's finest Reddit users, Kant, lock me in. Got my tongue tied with these philosopher names. Joining us today. And I'm going to have to say, because they are both admittedly much more knowledgeable in this realm than I am, I'm going to have to defer to both Kant and Eternal when things get complicated, because they both work in related fields. But it should be an interesting discussion today, because we have a lot of in-depth on the job and also just scientific nerdy learning to borrow from. So welcome, Kant. And if you would, as you say hi, kind of give us a breakdown of what your work entails and how you know so much.
Sure. Hello, everyone. Thanks for inviting me. So my real name is Tom. I'm a network engineer, work with a large corporation, one of those multinational corporations. I deal with the internal network, so I plan out how the network is going to look for the company, how we're going to interconnect our sites. But outside of that, I've dabbled around in amateur radio for about 20 years now. So I've got a bit of experience just with all things geekdom.
Excellent. You'll fit in just fine.
All right. So today, you talked about, Ron, radio spectrum. I also wanted to hit on the more generalized discussion surrounding radio spectrum and what I would call special types of property. And, before we begin, I just want to do a quick ANCAP 101 reiteration of, what is property and why is it important, just for anybody who's listening who, just to start from common ground. I'd like to define property as something which is scarce and rivalrous, and that pretty much is the basic definition of property. I think anything which is not scarce can't really be property. Anything which is not rivalrous, there's no reason for it to be property. So I think that's a good place to start from. You agree?
Yeah, thanks for that. And sorry to limit the scope of what we were talking about, or if that was the appearance. I know that as voluntarists, we're kind of want to go into the greater picture of things, and that all applies. I'll let Kant chime in because I know I've seen recent Reddit discussions in terms of the property implications and how we can best make efficient use of stuff.
Well, before we get too much into the details on it and everything, I wanted to just quickly talk about one thing first. The tragedy of the commons is something we all understand is to be the reason we have private property. It is the problem with any sort of public property. And there's a quote by Mises, which our good old friend Toasty Time dug out for us, that I think illustrates exactly why we really want property. Mises says, "If land is not owned by anybody, although legal formalism may call it public property, it is used without any regard to the disadvantages resulting. Those who are in a position to appropriate to themselves the returns, lumber and the game of the forests, fish of the water areas, and mineral deposits of the subsoil, do not bother about the later effects of their mode of exploitation. For them, erosion of the soil, depletion of the exhaustible resources, and other impairments of the future utilization are external costs not entering into their calculation of input and output." So basically what Mises is saying is, you know, people, when there's public property, are not going to take into account the cost and the externalities they create when using their land for their particular purposes or using a certain type of property for a particular purpose. You can extend this beyond land. You can extend this to all sorts of different types of property. And so I wanted to really focus on radio spectrum today, because radio spectrum is, I think, something which a lot of people are complaining about in the modern discourse. I think a lot of people complain about their, you know, cell phone companies and things like data caps and whatnot. And it's something that gets a lot of press and publicity, and we have a lot to weigh in on it. Plus, I think there's the most depth there to talk about in terms of technology, and it's something I hope will be enlightening and interesting for our listeners.
Fuck yeah.
So, to begin, I really wanted to start off with the radio spectrum is something which, you know, has been around since the beginning of time. We only have touched on it really since, I guess, when did Marconi send that first radio transmission? I wish I knew this off the top of my head and I should have looked it up, but in the 1800s. So I want to say the early 1800s.
Sounds like an Italian.
Yeah, I think Marconi was not the only person to experiment with radio transmission during that time as well. There was another guy, I can't remember his name to save my life. But the whole point is, there was a good, you know, century and a half without significant controls over radio spectrum. And in the modern age, when we talk about radio spectrum, at least in the United States, what do we talk about? We talk about the FCC. We talk about the frequency allocation. And this extends even internationally, with certain bands being recognized internationally. Something like, say, your Wi-Fi bands. So your laptop or your cell phone uses Wi-Fi. That's recognized internationally. And these things are things we understand them to be a big part of our life, and it's kind of interesting to see, well, at some point, you know, people could do whatever with radio spectrum, and suddenly now we're restricted to very specific frequencies we can work with. And how has this occurred? Why has it occurred? And is it a good thing? And that's one of the big things I want to talk about today. So, Rutto, Ron, Kant, feel free to weigh in here, but one of the big topics I wanted to start off with is the whole discussion about net neutrality. And that's something which I know has been a big topic among Reddit in the past couple of years. So any of you want to weigh in on this to begin with?
Well, yeah, sure. Before we say anything, we should talk a little bit about why, I mean, what's the ostensible or supposed or, you know, alleged reason to punish people for using radio frequencies that they are not licensed to, right? Why would we develop, why would we develop, but why would anyone develop a system to punish people to get them to stop broadcasting on certain frequencies? Why is that? And is that relevant today? We should explore that, right?
Yeah, and I think that's really because it's easier to use the power of the state to protect your interests. So if I'm a television broadcaster, it's much easier for me to just broadcast on a set frequency and tell people tune in. It takes more effort for me to develop a system where I can guarantee that delivery of video using different technologies. So I think it's the lazy way out.
It's not just that, but it's a form of protectionism, which is to say, when you have all the bandwidth you need, if you have the frequency that you want, and then your service does what it does, it gets your data to the customer, you don't have any reason to continue to innovate in ways to give the customer a better service or anything. It's, you know, this is the way it works. And TV, for since pretty much the beginning of broadcasting, was just simple. It was just, you know, tune in to your channels that are broadcast over the air, analog transmission. And only recently did they even bother to go digital. Only in the last, what was it, like 2-3 years ago? I can't remember when they finally enacted the switch. But, you know, television sets were glorified radios for a very long period of time. You know, they were barely more complicated than the thing in your car. They just had a screen on them.
Well, I think that counts a little bit as an extra complication. But yeah, like 90% of the stuff was the same thing, right? We just have an FM demodulator, and then you would need a way to separate the signals and produce whatever it is that you want to produce, which is image or sound, right?
Exactly. And I think, you know, the important thing to keep in mind is that as, you know, champions of the free market, as champions of things like technological progress and just producing things more cheaply and more accessibly for a greater number of people, which is what the free market is all about, we really need to look very closely at the whole idea of spectrum allocation. And then I think that we'll discover and be able to talk about and prove at the end of this show that spectrum is not something which should be controlled by the government and should not something that should even necessarily be static in nature. So, Tom, you wanted to talk a bit about net neutrality. So, do you want to jump in with that and just give a brief description of, you know, what net neutrality is and
sure
what it means for the internet?
So the reason that net neutrality into this is because it really provides that segue into spectrum allocation, because with net neutrality, what we're looking at is a lot of people are demanding that all traffic be treated equally across the internet. There's a big fear that corporations like Verizon or AT&T are going to say, you know what, we don't want you to subscribe to Netflix. We want you to subscribe to our video services. So we're going to degrade the quality of Netflix and we're going to make the quality of our video service better. Or even some people fear that there's going to be a model where all of a sudden you could use Yahoo's a month, but Google's search service $8 a month across your internet service provider. All of these fears are really unfounded. Basically, everybody wants a whole lot of bandwidth in their house for next to no cost. And a lot of the people that are screaming for it are people that are, you know, high demand users. They're the top 1% users that are doing BitTorrent and, you know, sucking up a lot of bandwidth. They want it for next to nothing. And they're afraid that the service providers are going to start throttling the traffic. So everybody starts demanding, we need net neutrality. You can't touch my data. Really, if they're afraid of that, they're now looking to say, well, the government should solve our problem. But they're looking at symptoms there. What they really need to look at is the root of the problem. So me as a consumer, if I say, you know, I use a lot of bandwidth, I really need a lot, I might be willing to pay more for it. And I might look at somebody like Verizon if they started degrading my service and say, you know, I really don't want to go with that model. I really want to buy from another service provider that provides a better service for me. However, my all she does is go on Facebook and check her email. If she can get service for $5 a month, even if they're going to degrade video quality, she'd be fine with that. She'd be a whole lot happier than paying the $30 a month she does today. So we should look and see what can competition offer the market. And that's where it really leads into spectrum allocation, is how can we actually get competition? Because today there's a limited set of competitors in a market, and it's really defined by right-of-way. Your local government will grant franchises right-of-way into neighborhoods, and they'll say, you're allowed to lay coax, or you're allowed to lay fiber or copper through a neighborhood. And you'll see those same companies dominate the marketplace. And since they know that they don't have any real competition, there's no incentive for them to innovate at all. There's no incentive for them to drive prices down. So a lot of people's fears start turning into, well, how do we regulate? We need to turn that into, well, how do we expand that into more solutions? So really that leads us to, how do we get over that last mile hurdle? And in my mind, that really becomes wireless. And a lot of people start groaning when you talk about wireless, because they think about tethering off
wireless.
Of their phone.
Exactly.
They think like about tethering off their. They think about tethering off their phones, or they think about in rural areas with wireless backhaul, things are pretty crappy. But they're not really thinking about how things could be. And we're even seeing nowadays newer technologies like WiMAX or some of our new 4G LTE technologies, where you can actually see high-speed bits across wireless networks. Problem is, yet again, who dominates those spaces? But the same people that take the home access space. So you had people Google try to get into the marketplace. They found that even them trying to get in and bidding for spectrum, it didn't work. It wasn't going to be feasible. But you'll see the people like Sprint and Verizon and AT&T, they love the spectrum allocation method because it doesn't matter to them that they've got to spend a lot of money on spectrum. It keeps everybody else out. So there's really no competition between, you know, the wireless market and the wired market. So that really leads us into, well, why do we limit certain frequencies to certain tiers? And in my mind, we should really open it up. And the best way that I've gotten this across to people that are really hostile to the idea is to say, go ahead and turn on. And, you know, most people don't have one, but you might find a NASCAR fan or somebody that's got one. Turn it on and actually listen. Do a sweep of the frequencies and see when it actually stops. And you'll find less than 1% of the spectrum at any moment has got anybody even transmitting on it. It's ridiculously underutilized. So we better utilize that. Well, I would say just to appease people, because people are going to say, well, we absolutely have to have certain frequencies dedicated for, you know, police and fire and EMT and certain applications. And then say, let's just allocate half of the frequency for free use for people. And a lot of people will buy into that. And then they'll say, well, what about interference? Because that's, you know, one big concept is, okay, if I'm transmitting at the same time as you, we're going to interfere with one another and neither one of us is going to get very far. I've got that very issue today with some of our bands, like your wireless within your home. There's no guarantee that you're not going to get interference. It's expected. So we've developed technologies which expect that and work around that. And even there, we've got a limited number of frequencies which they'll use. If you can imagine, if we've got three different channels that will transmit on for wireless in your home, and you see some interference there, well, what if instead of three, now you've got 1,000? And then what's even more exciting than that is, right now, the frequencies that we've got allocated, we'll specifically use certain ones for home wireless, but we kind of use them just because they're there. And the reason that they're there, like for your home wireless, is your microwave happens to use that same frequency. So the government said, well, it's pretty much unusable anyway. We'll let the people have it.
Do you remember back in the day when we had, this has been like 802.11a or something, like the original Wi-Fi, when you would turn your microwave oven on and you'd lose your internet connection?
Well, you honestly still can today, and the only reason that you probably don't is just the improvement in technology for dealing with interference. But it uses that exact same frequency band of 2.4 gigahertz.
Hey, Tom, is there a way you could explain, like, in ways that might make sense to our listeners or myself, what that technology is? I remember in a recent Reddit post, you were kind of describing a couple acronyms that lets you deal with interference, but how is that done? How did that come about?
So I'll speak to it at a high level, and that's probably all I really understand, but there are a couple different technologies to do it. One really cool way of doing it is where you actually hop between different frequencies. So you're going to send out a little bit of your track on one frequency, and then a few milliseconds later, you're going to send it out over a different frequency. And you're going to expect to see interference. So where you expect it, and hope for the best, you won't be disappointed. You know, at an even higher level, you can build protocols which expect traffic not to be so that's basically how the internet works today. It's really all deferred. Our protocols make sure that the far end has actually received the data, and if not, it'll retransmit. And for most applications, that works fine.
Those are like redundancy checks or cyclic redundancy checks or other various ways to confirm data, right?
Yeah, there's a lot of different ways of doing it. There's something called forward error correction, where you actually send more traffic, you could, you know, basically reconstruct on the far end using the parity. There are other ways where, you know, like you were saying, with CRCs, you can determine, is the data corrupt, and if so, resend it. And there's lots of different mechanisms that exist today for us doing that.
Ways that are separate from having and a bureaucracy delegate who can go where. And the big take home that you're saying is that you can, all that underutilized bandwidth you could potentially get hold of it or utilize it.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, there's nothing to stop from, you know, really improving upon the technology that we have today. There's just no need today. But you know, one thing that comes up is, you know, well, I really like to tune into my favorite radio station at a specific frequency. And to me, that's a really antiquated way of thinking about it, because we wouldn't say, I really like to visit my favorite website IP address. We know its name. So, you know, and me, I hope that we see a day where it's just as laughable to think of frequencies in that manner. You know, why couldn't we have a pointer system to this service? And let us figure it out. Why does the end user really need to know what frequency to get their, you know, favorite news station on?
It's
That's
interesting.
Really interesting analogy. Yeah, go ahead.
It's interesting that you talk about that. One of the, so this is getting pretty technical, but as far as my understanding of LTE systems, which is, you know, 4G LTE is the new thing out with Verizon. You know, that gives you your screaming fast, 10, 20 megabits per second on your phone. It allows you to watch high definition videos streamed over the air. That stuff is awesome. And the way it works is there's a big carrier, there's a carrier band there that's used as like a common channel, and everybody tries to talk over it to get information on where they're supposed to go. So it kind of works that way within the system itself. And of course, what you're saying is we could apply that across the entire spectrum, which I think is definitely the direction it's heading if people are trying to improve the way spectrum is allocated in the first place. And certainly, I think that people don't realize how tight the bands right now are. I wanted to really talk a bit about the background of, you know, how much data demand is going up in terms of like cell phone usage. So cell phone data demand is entering the level of like exabytes per day. I mean, it's a crazy amount of data usage. And exabyte, for those of you who don't know, is like, is it a billion terabytes, or it's a lot of data? I think it's a billion terabytes. So basically, it's the equivalent of like trying to transmit an entire, you know, bus full of hard drives over the air. And it's a lot of data. Actually, it's probably a lot more than that even.
10 to the 18th, or in binary, if you prefer, 2 to the 60th.
Okay, it's a million terabytes. Okay, so it's a ridiculous amount of data. And probably could transmit the entire quantity of like YouTube over it or something. It's an absolutely absurd amount of data. And that's the kind of data we're dealing with going over the air all the time to various users around the world. And what's happening is, you know, data demand has just grown exponentially, continues to grow exponentially, but spectrum allocation is very, very static. We've had only a few bands open up in the last decade, and they have gone for billions of dollars. I think, didn't they free up some of the analog TV bands when they switched over from analog to digital, as I was talking about before? I think they auctioned some of that off to cell phone companies, and they went for like $1 billion.
Yeah, and that was one thing where I was willing to give Obama a little bit of credit, but I was very premature with that. He promised that the white spaces would be allocated for free use, for rural use. Because if you could imagine, if you live in the middle of nowhere, it's really not economically feasible for me to run fiber out there and spend all sorts of money to hit 30 families when, you know, I could, with that same infrastructure, hit 30,000 in an urban environment. But by using that white space, which previously was used for television, you know, I could then reach the 1,000 people for that same investment. Now, he said he would free that up for free use, and then they went ahead and sold. So instead of opening up to mom and pop ISPs that could then start competing with the AT&Ts and Verizons, now we hand it back over to AT&T and Verizon. So it's that same cycle.
Okay, yeah, that's definitely a big problem. And it comes to something I really wanted to talk about, and that I have done some specific research in my academic years. And that's going to be, of course, the allocation of spectrum and the way it actually works. And I bet most of you do not know this. The FCC, I would be surprised if you do, because this was something that was a surprise to me. The FCC, the way they do it is they take geographic areas And these are huge geographic areas. We're talking about, you know, hundreds of thousands of people potentially in them or more. And they have them, you know, spread across the entire country, split up into these little chunks of land, and they auction off, you know, little bands of spectrum. And you really need to buy large swaths of spectrum to make proper use of it in most cases. So, you know, you're not going to use 2.5 kilohertz of spectrum. That's enough for like one cell phone signal in that particular range. And that's not enough spectrum to use for a large scale application. So you need to have a ton of those little tiny bands, and you need to gobble a wide array of them up, and they all need to be like adjacent to each other so you can plan your system well. So what the FCC seems to do is they group these things in such a way that you have no choice but to bid a ton of money for a lot of spectrum in a large area that is going to be not homogeneous. It's going to be very heterogeneous in population density, and you're not going to make use of that spectrum in a lot of the areas that you've bought it for. So, for instance, say I buy spectrum for, you know, area covering like a small city like Roanoke or something. I'm just trying to pick up a small city out of my hat. And you get, you know, maybe a few outlying towns, and you get Roanoke, but you need to have the spectrum to cover Roanoke. If you're a cell phone carrier, you have to be able to provide for that heavy use there. But you really don't need that spectrum outside of, you know, in the country, because there's just not going to be as many people using it. So what you've done is you've way overbid for something to provide a service to a much larger area than you really want to cover, and you end up spending much more per hertz, per bit of spectrum, than you would otherwise spend if you could buy it in smaller chunks. And the way the FCC does it is, you know, you really don't have a choice. You have to buy the large chunks, and this prices small people out of the market. That's really what it does. It's like having to go to Costco only. Like, there was no grocery store you could buy an individual line. You had to buy, like, you know, a 2-gallon drum of olive oil or something.
I'm okay with that, but just the waiting in line part sucks.
I do like Costco's the chicken bakes, though. Those are really good.
Those are a different line.
That's a different line. But they're good. But the whole point is, you know, imagine if you had to always buy in bulk. Well, that would really change the way people would buy things, and it would... You might have even an incentive at that point to make big shopping trips or combine your resources. Like, you know, if you're living with a roommate, would you go and buy all your groceries one by one, or would you go together? And I think you would want to go together so that you can buy things at the same time, and you'd have to combine resources and everything. And it'd be more of a pain, and it would really discourage people from going and just picking up a lime at the store when you need it. And the same thing applies to spectrum.
So you're saying people have to get, just so I can kind of resumer, make sure I understand, you said generally it's sold as big geographic territories and portions of spectrum, that it's just generally large on both fronts that, you know, prices people out of the market that want to buy that lime.
Definitely. And also the way it works, because it's an auction, you're going to have the big guys coming in there with big bucks, and they're going to really outbid everyone, rather than it being as simple as you walk into a store. And, you know, with capitalism, the way it works is, just because you have, you know, a rich guy who can afford to spend a ton of money on bread or something, doesn't mean that you both walk into a store, you both throw down all the cash you have, and he walks away with all the bread. It's more like you buy your loaf, and if he wants to buy a lot of bread, he can do it, but you're going to get your loaf. And that's just generally how it works. But with the auction system that the government uses, it doesn't work that way. It goes to the highest bidder, which, again, hurts little guys.
And keep it in mind, the incumbents want it to stay that way, because if that changes, that then opens up competition, which then puts them, you know, in risk of being out of business.
Yeah, good point to make.
Definitely.
Probably your employer's interests at times, maybe. Actually, one audio point I wanted to make is, Con, I don't know if your mic may be on auto enable, but if you stay like a steady distance, or maybe a little bit closer on average, we might stop losing you. We kind of got a little bit of loss every once in a while. Just a heads up.
Okay, I'll speak up.
Yeah, you want to hear those mellifluous words.
Those beautiful pipes. So, yeah, to expand on the topic at hand, what do you do about this in a market? A lot of people will talk about, you know, free market leads to conglomeration, leads to rewarding economies of scale and all this stuff. So, you know, the big guys will still have control over everything. And the truth is, you know, as with my bread analogy, the market seems to reward little guys proportionally to how much they have rather than completely pushing them out aside. So you will have some emergent, you know, small local carriers. And what really happens is in a free market, Spectrum will become something similar to any other commodity, which is to say it can be traded on an open market, like a stock market. You can bid on it. You can buy futures in it. And you'll be able to utilize it in such a way that you get what you need when you need it. So the equivalent of going to the grocery store and picking up, you know, just a small, you know, 8-ounce bottle of olive oil rather than getting a bathtub full of it from Costco or something and having it sit around all year.
Or the alternative is don't guarantee anybody access at all. Just make it best case, you know, best effort, and develop protocols which take that into consideration. So, and me expecting a certain frequency and things will work, expect that it won't work and work around that.
And there's definitely cases for both scenarios. I mean, one thing to keep in consideration and to play a bit of devil's advocate to you, Tom, is equipment needs to be designed with specific frequencies in mind that it wants to use, because antennas work physically, like to work at certain frequencies. They're best suited for broadcasting at particular frequencies and don't work very well at other ones. So I wouldn't want to use my little dinky cell phone antenna to try to pick up, you know, really low 20 megahertz radio waves that you would want to pick up with like a ham radio or something. You won't get a good reception at all.
You won't. However, right now the amount of spectrum that you have access to is extremely small. So, you know, if you were to play around with the 900 megahertz band, you've got 28 megahertz or 26 megahertz to play with, which isn't much at all. If that was opened up to a couple hundred megahertz, you could design around that. And I really think that you wouldn't have the problems that people think, everybody stepping over one another. And you also have to think about what type of system are you really looking to build. Is this for real-time communications? Is this for networking? And I think as we see the world evolve, everything's really starting to turn into a data network, and then everything's transported over top of it. And that's really how the internet works. And the internet really is built around that more of a best effort technology. And as everything's built with that in mind, well.
Interesting. Once again, we were losing you just a little bit again. I don't know if it was due to volume or distance from the mic, but we heard most of it. It
could just be the internet connection, of course. So unfortunately, we're broadcasting through the tubes, and ironically, like, we're using not a best effort because we have a real-time thing going on. So that's a good illustration about how some things work well when you want to get everything through, and some things you just accept what you can get. So...
If you don't have something to chime in, Eternal, I was just going to kind of play the layman devil's advocate for what Tom was saying.
Go ahead first. Yeah, go ahead and do that, and I'll try to address it as best I can.
Okay. Yeah, I'm just playing around with the ideas as I take them. And again, I'm the layman here, but the he's talking about the best effort and how he kind of seems to feel strongly about that would be a way to kind of best reconcile things or best make use of resources. And again, we're talking about property day and allocation of scarce resources. If I was to play the part of devil's advocate or status fearmonger, if you will, you get to a point, it's always the reductio ad absurdum situation where people are saying, okay, what if there's so many people and there's big providers or people that hog up a lot of bandwidth, and you're at the point where, you know, in this dog eat dog world of the internet and bandwidth allocation, that just it's all full. And then I guess at that point, the scenario, you have people trying to, you know, with the best technology for, you know, finding ways around or the best ways to kind of take up that bandwidth or find it. I mean, those are the people that are going to have all the power, not the people that can lobby the FCC or maintain their incumbent position the best. It's going to be people with the best, I guess, technology rather, to kind of, you know, find find bandwidth and have resources. Is that kind of how you envision it going ultimately, or is it just so out in the future or not even possible because there's so much extra space now that you don't see that as being a problem? And you can ask me to rephrase because I'm kind of rambling if you want.
Yeah, so personally, I really don't see it as a problem right now because I think we're looking at these resources as dedicated resources instead of looking at them as specific time slices. So I may need to communicate with you, but for the past minute, I've been sitting here idle and I've not been talking. So why should I be taking up bandwidth or why should I be taking up spectrum as I'm sitting there idle? And sitting idle, why should you be taking up? So if we start taking a look at things in a different way, it scales a lot differently. So if you look at in the day when we really used log phones quite a bit, you had specific circuit switched infrastructure, and you had to dedicate pathways. Whereas now we've moved over to a packet.
In the show Mad Men, or at least harking back to it used to be, you actually had to manually switch things over, right? There were operators to do that.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that was back in the day when the government truly had a monopoly over the phone service, correct?
Well, that's an interesting story. We can go back to that later. I did some research on, you know, why was AT&T a monopoly, and very interesting history on that one. But we've since moved to a packet-switched environment, which is what the internet is. So you're not taking up bandwidth simply just because you're connected to the internet. You're only taking up bandwidth when you're sending traffic. And that's why it can scale so well. That's why, you know, people talk about having, Google coming to Kansas City and everybody's got gig out to their house. Well, don't for a minute think that if everybody turned on their gig connection at their house and maxed it out that Google could handle that. They're relying on statistics to say only so many people are going to use so much bandwidth at any time. So I think we could take a look at that same scenario with the radio spectrum and say, let's start thinking about it differently. Let's start treating everything as packet switched instead of circuit switched or even dedicated constantly on.
I can't agree more with a lot of that stuff, and it's important to mention that a lot of cell phone carriers these days are moving in that direction, even though they really don't want to. Just they're forced to simply by the little bit of competitive market that there is. They still have to respond to consumer demands, and they are spending a ton of money innovating with some brilliant technology to do these things. But that's only a tiny fraction of the available spectrum, and I really wanted to hit on one thing. To beat over the head why the FCC sucks so much. And it's because a lot of this spectrum that's been allocated is allocated to what I would call dead zone use, and especially by either government agencies or the military. And they just like to keep these things clear because, well, they're despite the fact that it's obvious that we have technology like that, which can make use of spectrum in intelligent ways, they prefer to take the dumb approach, which is it's ours, everyone keep off of it, and screw you to using it intelligently and efficiently. It's ours, and you can't broadcast on it.
Well, otherwise people might swear on it. That's why.
Thanks, Obama.
Thanks, Obama. That's why we're not on it, because we swear every once in a while.
But what I'm really talking about is a lot of military use, and satellite communication stuff, airplanes, radar, all sorts of these things, which... You know, might not even be. Like, I'm trying to think of a reason why you need to have a gigahertz of spectrum just sitting there unused on the ground when all you're doing is talking back and forth with antennas pointing up at the sky and back down at you. That's what happens with satellite communications, is that you take these huge chunks of bandwidth and you say only satellites can use these, despite the fact that no satellite should ever be able to pick something up pointing from ground to ground because it's perpendicular to the way the dishes are pointing. It's really really simple things like that. They're just common sense approaches, but because of the way spectrum is allocated, no one really thinks about this stuff. And that's why I'd like to go back to what we were talking about before, this kind of debate between, well, the best use, best claim case, and just kind of leaving it open to everybody versus treating it as kind of like a market and treating spectrum as property. And whether one is better than the other, I think both are significantly better than what we have right now, which is this horrible tragedy of the commons, which is to say there's a whole bunch of spectrum out there and we are going to leave some of it up for everybody else, and you can figure out what to do with it, but we're going to take a ton of it away and make it extremely artificially scarce and use it really dumbly, because government as the solution to the tragedy of the commons never makes sense. And it never, essential planning doesn't work.
Yeah, the other thing to consider is we've all got common interests, so it's not unreasonable to think that we would develop some type of system to make sure that we automatically allocate resources effectively, even in a voluntary manner. So what I mean by that is, it would benefit me if I did not interfere with my neighbor, and that my neighbor did not interfere with me. So it's not unreasonable to think that there will be registries which the equipment would automatically connect to determine what's the best set of frequency I may want to use in my specific. And as we're seeing the cost of GPS and things like that come down in cost, it's not unreasonable to think that more critical communications may not be able to make those self-determinations, even if it's not at cost. Even if it's not something that I'm guaranteed, I'm still going to take best effort to not interfere with my neighbors.
I like to make the analogy that it's like everybody on the road drives their own cars going in different directions, and we all use the same roads and stuff. And of course, without government, who would build the roads? I'm just kidding.
Go to Somalia.
You're right. I should go to Somalia.
Take a quick detour.
I heard it's beautiful there.
Anarchist paradise.
But what we have is, you know, everybody going in different directions, yet we try not to hit each other. It's not like, you know, obviously we have some level of policing and whatnot, but I think by and large, even in places where there really are no rules of the road, you know, like India or China, you've seen some of those like intersections, it's just a complete cluster, and you wonder, you know, how can anybody get from point A to point B? And the answer is work it out. People work it out because everyone has the incentive of, I want to get to where I'm going, and interfering with you is interfering with my ability to get to where I'm going, unless you drive like a tank or something, that I guess it wouldn't really matter.
And of course, the like of frequency jamming or intentional interference comes up. And the way that I see it is, if you're intentionally interfering with me, tend to see that as an act of aggression. Accidental, everybody's going to step out of one another, but if you're going to go out of your way to try to jam everything I do, I see that as aggression.
I do, in a way, in the sense that, and this goes back to what I was saying before, is that, well, you know, Spectrum, we can make these kinds of mutual contracts, which is to say, I'm not going to interfere with you, you're not going to interfere with me, and put these things in writing and put them out in public, and that's what I would consider to be kind of a property deed. To say, I've homesteaded this spectrum because I'm using it for this amount of time, for this purpose, with this kind of technology or something. And if you try to interfere with me, then we're going to have a problem. So try not to, please. And these things can be traded around, and we can basically have a system whereby spectrum gets eaten up by people who are trying to use it for good purposes. And if bad guys come in and try to muck with things, or people just really don't respect the social rules that are out there, you're going to have ways of dealing with that just like you would with any other property violation. DROs or whatever you think would exist in that, ANCAPistan, ANCAP land, LibPair, whatever you want to call it. You know, they'll be able to find out who's doing it, get them to shut down, impose restrictions on them, whatever means necessary. But the whole point is, these things don't necessarily have to be imposed with the kind of monopolistic violence that we have now through the FCC and the government. I think the market can do a great job of policing that kind of activity. And I think that the market can also find the most efficient allocations of spectrum just by allowing people to voluntarily create contracts with each other and trade those contracts. So that's how I envision Spectrum looking when we get to the point where everything really does kind of get homesteaded. And I think that's not for a very long time, but as Tom is saying, you know, we have an enormous amount of spectrum out there. Technology is improving every day, and I think it's going to be a long time before we truly reach this kind of saturation. It's like saying, if you look at the United States on a map, you know, how much of it is actually settled by private citizens? How much is owned as private land? And the answer is very little of it. I mean, only like 3% is actually developed. And I can't imagine
you know, much more than that is owned. A lot of it is owned by the government. So it's like there's these artificial restrictions in property on land, and there's these artificial restrictions on property in radio spectrum. And I think these things extend to more things, which we can talk about in a little bit in the last few minutes of the show.
There's a popular case that comes up in mainstream news recently that maybe you guys can help resolve how it might be explained or worked around. And I think I'm starting to get an idea from getting to hear some people who are experts in the field, or at least way more knowledgeable than I. And that case would be the situation of GPS and LTE. LTE was coming out as new technology. I don't know if this actually kind of is within the breadth of what we're talking about, but I do know that there was some discussion and hoopla about these allocated bandwidths, you know, things that it's taken for granted that the government needs to do, the FCC needs to partition off, and that there was some interaction because they were close or something. There was some interference between the LTE technology and the GPS, and I guess for a while people were making it seem like there was going to be some conflict and somebody was going to have to give way. Is there any substance to the idea that we needed to have these, that we need to have these separate? Does the kind of solutions, you know, of maybe best effort, does that apply here?
From an anecdotal perspective, I can say that my phones have LTE and I have a GPS receiver and they don't seem to bother each other at all. So
I can see that too.
I'm on Verizon. I don't know what it is for other carriers necessarily, but I don't think there's an actual problem. So either they worked it out or it wasn't really an issue to begin with. But yeah, if there was interference, you do have to make the case of, you know, who has the best claim to the spectrum. And I would definitely weigh in favor of GPS in that case, because, you know, if I'm an arbiter, I would weigh in favor of GPS because, one, they were there first. Two, they have these big satellites in the sky and you can't really change what they do. They're not flexible. And three, of course, is that, you know, GPS is already integrated into all these systems, and making everybody, imposing huge amounts of costs on them would mean you'd have to, as a cell phone carrier, pay to have them change their systems up in such a way that they could react to you using that spectrum. You would owe them compensation for encroaching on their property, and that would be very expensive economically, and that's how I would see it. So I don't know why any cell phone company would try to interfere if they were going to have those kinds of costs imposed on them.
Well, and also remember that they're limited to the spectrum right now. So if you looked at a world where they aren't limited based upon that auction system, then maybe you're not going to pick which may have harmonics that interfere with one another. You'd be more flexible.
Definitely. So ultimately, we can kind of wave it away as a specific problem created by the constraints of the system we have now. But this kind of thing could emerge in a market system. It's just far, far, far more unlikely, at least for the time being. Now, certainly, I envision 100 years down the road or something, when I look like, you know, Strom Thurmond's, you know, rotting skeleton or something. I envision spectrum, especially in populated areas, probably being completely clogged in the sense that there's no real usable spectrum up until the point where you hit like infrared or something. It's just completely full, and people are trying to get more out of it, but it's about as good as it's going to get. It could get to that kind of saturation. I don't know.
It's really hard to say, because we even face this today, like in a corporate world, we're looking at wireless networking, for instance. My company is doing a large deployment of video on laptops as well as smartphones, and to be able to do high bandwidth, high definition video on these, you need quite a bit of bandwidth. You need quite a bit of bandwidth because you have expectation that there may be some drops. The faster the connection, the better off. So looking at that, where a single access point for one conference room may be good, may have been good in 2005, you may see that density increase. So what we're doing is we're actually lowering the power output on the APs to cover smaller cells, and putting a larger number of these APs, so the density increases, but the number of clients per AP decreases as well. So the amount of bandwidth goes up by upgrading your APs. The amount of bandwidth per user increases automatically through that, but then when you start lowering the number of clients per AP, you're going to increase that even more. So to
AP stands for access point. I don't know if you
sorry about that. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, just yes, thank for you. Clarification for those of you listening.
So, so essentially, in those very dense areas, you don't need your transmit be nearly as large as in the rural areas. So you would see that maybe I could use the same set of spectrum that somebody three blocks away could use, whereas in a rural area, I wouldn't want to use the same spectrum that miles away would use. So I think one possible way that you would overcome would be lower power requirements, because you don't need to get nearly as far.
And a lot of that is shifting the things away from wireless to wired and creating what I would almost call like these personal areas of spectrum, you know, such that eventually it would go down to maybe you would just have certain spectrum allocated to, you know, specific rooms in your house, even just so you can run everything without it bothering you, you know, devices in the room over or something. And quite frankly, we already have things like that with Wi-Fi. It's designed to do things like that.
Yeah, or even Bluetooth is known as a personal area network, so you would expect that to be, you know, within fives of the device. And then
my Bluetooth reaches really far. I was surprised. I actually set up my Bluetooth and was able to get it outside my apartment building, like way down the street. So I don't know. Maybe mine's like supercharged.
So you're probably being nice to your neighbors then.
It's okay. I hate them all. I'm not a hateful person. I just really don't even know my neighbors, to be honest.
You're radiating all of their testicles, so they have low sperm counts now?
Or gigantic balls, like in that episode of South Park.
Oh, yeah, I forgot that's the effect.
You'd have to do, microwave radiation, though? So if you turn up your Wi-Fi router really, really high, if you crank that power out...
My popcorn will
big
pop.
Balls.
My balls will get huge.
Yeah, your balls will be huge. That's what South Park told me. So, I guess we have, what, about 10 minutes left here? Is that about right?
I got the recorder going. It's about 57. I think we started about 15 past the hour, maybe 20. So, yeah.
Okay,
so
yeah.
I have a question.
Okay, go right up.
Guys, what can you tell me about software-defined radios?
That's my area of expertise, so I can tell you a good bit about them.
Software-defined radios?
Yeah, that would be very cool to hear about.
Well, it's one of the areas I work in. And so traditionally, I don't know if you guys as kids ever did something where you connected some wires together and built like a little crystal radio or something to pick up, you know, some radio signals. Do you ever do anything like that? That was like a little lab or something you could purchase, or maybe you did in school.
Are you saying my kids or as kids?
As kids.
Okay. I don't have
any kids.
I did
that when I was a kid.
To my knowledge.
Yeah. That was where I got my...
Yeah. That's where a lot of people get their first exposure into radio stuff. In any case, that's the way radios pretty much used to work for a long period of time. Then they've moved into what I would call hardware-defined radios, which are the same thing, but with just not crystals. They use some straight-up hardware devices and oscillators and whatnot.
So could you define those two terms again in summary? There's software-defined radios and hardware-defined radios?
Yeah, define the terms, yeah.
Yeah, so the best way to define software and hardware-defined radios...
How is it different from a regular radio, right?
I would define a hardware-defined radio as something which is set to look at specific frequencies by the hardware in it, whereas a software-defined radio takes in all sorts of different frequencies and you tune it not with changing the hardware, but with changing the software within the radio. So a software-defined radio is going to be something which is, you know, controlled in the software environment, and instead of turning knobs which actually change physical components in the machinery of the radio, you are just setting different bits in certain registers or something, and that changes what the radio takes on.
How does it work? Like, I mean, I know that when I tune my radio, you know, in my car, or when I just move the dial on one of the old style radios, there's a component inside whose frequency changes, right? And that allows the radio to pick up a different carrier wave. I know that
you don't turn it. I thought you talked to your car because you have the Knight Rider car.
Well, I also do talk to the car, but then again, when the radio is playing, I can't really talk to it, right?
True. You can sing to it, sing along to the car.
Also, if I hear Alex Jones on the radio, the car just goes, "Hey, wire," because the guy's just like going, "Ah, ah," right? That's not good.
Lizard juice everywhere.
So how does it work? Like, if I go and use software to program the radio, what changes underneath the whole thing to make the radio tune into a different frequency or scan frequencies? And how is, you know, how beneficial could it be to have a software-defined radio? Why is it better than a regular radio, right?
So, Tom, do you know about this stuff? Do you want to answer in? Because it's a tough question for me to give a good synopsis on. It's something I wasn't prepared to talk about. So
it almost sounds like Reto knows, but he's asking leading lawyer-like questions to try to get you to squirm.
Oh no, I honestly don't know.
Oh, okay, interesting.
No, I mean, to it as an heir, but I could speak to it as somebody who's just done some reading about it. And from what I understand, it's basically front-ending that hardware with more technology to be able to deal with some of the stuff like we were talking about. So if there's interference, in the past we looked at ways of filtering out interference, you know, possibly with things like coils, whereas with software-defined radios, we would take a look at that interference and be able to filter it out from, you know, an integrated circuit level with software. So you would be able to stay the same, but maybe a year from now somebody's developed a much better algorithm for dealing with that and be able to create a better filter.
So all the advantages of software apply to the software-defined radio, right?
That is correct. So with innovations in the software realm, you don't need to change out the hardware. You can use the same hardware and have a better radio with better software.
You will probably have to install more memory, though.
Software radios enjoy all the niceties of modern computing. You can get some very expensive, very flashy software radios. I work with some which are called USRPs, which are available. You can just buy them on the open market. It's all just the out there radio. You can grab them, and they're like $2,000 a piece or so, and they're customizable and all this good stuff. And the whole point with them is that you can do basically anything you want to. So if you look at your cell phone designed to transmit at very certain frequencies with certain modulations in certain ways, and you have to literally change out the hardware in there to get the most out of it. I mean, some of it may be some software defined radio stuff in there, but historically with the older cell phones especially, it was like all hardware, and the cell phone did what the cell phone did, and there was no changing it. Whereas with something like this USRP, with a software defined radio, you can transmit it like a cell phone, you can transmit FM, you can transmit like an amateur radio, like a ham radio, you can transmit, you know, stuff like a satellite radio. You can do anything you want with these things. They are freaking awesome. And the real point is, you know, flexibility and the ability to employ fantastic digital signal processing that just wasn't available 5-10 years ago.
I want one. Awesome.
They're about $2,000. You can get it. You can play with it.
I need a subsidy. I need a bailout.
Thanks, Obama.
Cut.
Need a phone? Obama phone.
Speaking of which, it's getting to about that time. Do we have any closing statements? I like the high note you left it on. You can certainly keep going.
The closing statement I have to make is, of course, that we didn't get to all the other stuff I was thinking we would talk about. We've actually filled up this entire time with talking about radios, and that's fine by me. That's great.
That means, yeah.
It's what we know the most about, and I think it's the most interesting thing to talk about. So,
yeah, thanks for sharing, and thanks for Tom or Reddit user ContLunkMan for sharing. That was very informative, and I feel like I've done the work of studying about these things without really having to do much at all.
Well, thanks for having me on, guys.
Yeah, excellent. And we might have to do it again sometime. Eternal, I'll take us out if give me the okay. So it's about 23:17 hours Eastern Standard Time and about 20:18 hours Pacific. We got a late start due to radio broadcasting issues. Lol. But keep Obama in president, you know.
We got DDoSed.
We got DDoSed.
We got popular enough that somebody decided to attack our radio broadcasting. And them standards that are raging.
We resurface faster thanks to Reto than some other large corporations have. So that's good.
Yeah, round of applause to Reto for getting us back up and running.
Absolutely. Hooray. He gave us a phone. He's gonna radio spectrum allocation. Again, that's Obama's doing this, by the way. Thanks, Obama. You too can choose to decline to state as we continue to feel all the feels on either declinefm.com or decline to state on iTunes. I would like to remind you that Decline to State is still brought to you free of charge, as well as paid advertisement free. We hope to soon have a Bitcoin donation link up and running for those interested in helping to keep the servers running, the website developing, and the show going. A big thanks to all of our hosts, tech experts, researchers, contributors, our listeners, and of course, Reddit user ConlockMan or Tom for joining us. Thanks again. Decline Estate is a group effort motivated by our love of liberty, as well as capitalist bow ties and free market monocles. So remember, when asked, always decline to state. This is Ronald Paul saying, the FCC won't let me be, or let me be, so let me see.
I can't do better than that. This is Eternal. Thank you so much, Tom, for coming on, and hope you guys learned a lot of good stuff, and have a good night.
Thanks, guys, for having us in your homes. I hope you have a fantastic day, and we will continue polluting the airwaves with the message of freedom.
America! Take us out, old school, Tom.
Good night, everybody.